And now we're going to be probably moving on to our next main interview for the program with Graham Matthews. Now, Graham Matthews is a participant in the NDIS and he is also the Socialist Alliance spokesperson for disability rights and is also a very frequent commentator on the NDIS and economic matters for Green Left. So, good morning, Graham.
Good morning, Jacob. How are you?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. So I was going to pass it on to Chloe to kind of ask kind of like the first question to kind of start off our kind of discussion.
Hi, Graham. Chloe here. Thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure, Chloe.
So, Graham, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, the NDIS, which was first launched in 2013, promised that it would support a better life for hundreds of thousands of people with a significant and permanent disability and their families and carers. And it was delivered with the promise of peace of mind for every Australian and anyone who has or might acquire a disability. Graham, do you think that the NDIS has lived up to that promise to support the needs of people with disabilities, their families and carers since its launch back in 2013?
It's a very good question. The aims and the objectives of NDIS are quite laudable. They're very commendable in many senses in terms of, as you say, trying to give peace of mind to any person, at least an Australian citizen, who has or may acquire a disability that they'll be supported throughout their life. Now, NDIS was launched in 2013, as you say. Largely, a number of trials were launched in the Hunter and Newcastle and so forth. Even as far back as that, the cracks in the system began to emerge, particularly in terms of the complete deregulation of pricing for NDIS. So really trying to, even at that very early stage, place a cap on the expenditure required from the government, by this Liberal government, for NDIS and really try to clamp down on the cost of providing people with disability. It was launched, it's been something of a staggered launch, depending on the state you're in. In New South Wales, it was launched in 2016, certainly for new participants, which is how I encountered NDIS. I'm a sepsis survivor. Just over 5 years ago, I contracted double pneumonia, which led to sepsis and then septic shock. I spent 3 weeks in a coma, woke up and went through a number of amputation operations. So I've lost my legs and my fingers. And that's not an entirely uncommon situation. Now, I suppose one of the big difficulties with NDIS is its intense secrecy. Every participant's plan is secret, in as much as it's not published anywhere online. Even general trends, or indeed benchmarks, and that's a term that NDIS like to use, or a general idea of how much each participant is actually receiving, depending on their situation. And that secrecy creates all kinds of difficulties for each participant as they try to negotiate quite individually with NDIS, and can lead to a number of significant problems. It's also worth pointing out that the estimate is that there are approximately 4 million people in Australia who are living with disability. On this International Day for People with Disability, that's something to really reflect on. That's almost one in six of the Australian resident population are living with disability. Yet the number of people who are covered by NDIS is barely a tenth of that, at around about 400,000. And having known that, this is not a figure. It's not like the numbers of people with disability have somehow climbed unsustainably over the last 2 or 3 years. The numbers of people with disability have remained fairly stable for a number of years now. So it's extremely it's extremely unsupportable, I suppose, of the government to claim that all of a sudden they've realised, or they claim they've realised, that NDIS is unsustainable, and that in fact people like myself, who are really quite profoundly disabled, are using NDIS, certainly as the Minister for NDIS chooses to try to claim at the moment, as a welfare source, and that this needs to be clamped down on. This kind of appeal to the basest element of the LNP supporters needs to be strongly resisted, not only by people with disability and their supporters, but anybody who stands up for a just society. So to try to draw together those threads and answer your question, NDIS was definitely an improvement. It's definitely a positive step. However, it's an incomplete and insufficient step, and something which needs radical reform to really bring to life the expectations that it created among people with disability when it was launched in 2013.
Yeah, so that kind of goes into kind of guess the next question, Graham. I guess the one kind of critique, a frequent kind of critique of the NDIS, is that it had essentially kind of privatised and corporatised what is considered an essential service for servicing the needs of people with disabilities. And I guess, can you guess unpack that? I guess in, especially you referenced the Liberal government as well, especially in the context of, you know, how have different governments over the years since 2013 have supported and not supported the NDIS?
So it's pretty much, I'm not exactly sure in which month NDIS was launched in 2013, but as I said, it was very much launched as a trial back then, with rollout really only beginning for most new participants in 2016, and then even later for existing participants transitioning from existing state-based systems. Excuse me. There have been, it is worth pointing out that many people who live with disability have found that NDIS has opened up a new chapter of their lives, which in many cases they could never have hoped to have achieved. NDIS has, by a focus on individual assessment and providing for the needs of the individual, it has, in some cases at least, provided for additional funding or additional support for people with disability to be able to live their lives as freely as possible. That being said, as you say, NDIS is predicated on a privatised, for-profit system. So it's a government subsidy to private providers, most of whom are business-oriented, so in the sense that they are for-profit, to provide for the needs of persons with disability. Now, at the extreme end of that, we've seen, and certainly the mainstream media loves to tell us about the number of rorts that have occurred from NDIS providers, where unscrupulous providers have manipulated or indeed defrauded NDIS participants. You know, we have stories of luxury cars and gold bars and so forth being bought with NDIS funds. That's a very small proportion of where the NDIS funds are going. Nevertheless, a large proportion are going to some enormous businesses, that particularly those that run personal care organisations, again, private businesses, but and that, you know, provide, that they may well provide some level of service for NDIS participants, but in many cases the driving force is really maximising the return for shareholders. And really, the funding of people with a disability, the purpose of that should be to support the needs of people with disability and not to maximise the profits of large corporations. Now, the Socialist Alliance, of which I'm a member, advocates, certainly we understand the gains that have been made by NDIS, but we advocate that private for-profit companies should not receive government funding for NDIS. Nevertheless, that should go to community-based organisations, whether it be, you know, charitable organisations or other community-based organisations that serve the needs of people with disability. There were gains. Now, I can't speak from experience because, you know, ironically, I was very lucky in the sense that when I acquired my disability, NDIS was there, so I was the participant before I left hospital in 2017. Nevertheless, those who were living with disability prior to that say that the state-based system was very limited and quite inflexible in the support that it would actually garner and guarantee for people with disability. And certainly from quite bitter experience of the underfunded and often exceedingly bureaucratic state-based health system in which I spent 10 months 5 years ago, I can say that an alternative of simply returning the entire process to that very bureaucratised governmental health system is no alternative at all. What we need is a genuine disability-based NDIS based on the community, run by people with disability and actually serving their needs rather than being driven to maximise profit or indeed reduce cost for the government.
Oh, thanks, Graham. You have sort of touched on the next question I was going to ask, but I wanted to mention the fact that, you know, we know there are millions of people with disability who are from a non-English speaking background and many underuse disability services. I mean, I imagine there'd be translators to help. The question was, what are some of the areas and solutions that could provide NDIS in actually serving people's needs?
I think if we look at it holistically and from a bird's eye view, the biggest issue with NDIS and indeed government funding of so much funding to support people in their daily lives is that it's rationed. The government doles it out with a teaspoon from a very large pool of money that the government collects from taxes from you and I and from corporations and through other means and so forth. But the government doles out support for people with disability, whether it's the disability support pension, whether it's the dole, or indeed NDIS with an eyedropper or with a teaspoon. At the same time, they give massive massive subsidies to gas companies to wreck our environment and destroy the possibilities of a transition, of a just transition to a renewable future. So the government will argue that, and it certainly will argue very strenuously in the run-up to the next federal election next year, that NDIS is completely unsupportable, that it is outstripped its expectations of cost and so forth, and needs to be severely reined back. Now, that's essentially code for these people don't vote for the LNP. We get no votes out of this, so we're going to smash the amount of funding the government provides to NDIS and show our big business and LNP base that that we're tough. We're tough economic managers, and we can make the decisions to really to cut funding. To cut this massive budget deficit where necessary. Now, without touching on the issue of whether a budget deficit in and of itself is such a bad thing, certainly people who are eligible for NDIS or indeed people with a disability more broadly are some of the most disadvantaged in this society. As you point out, Chloe, many people with who live with a disability are from a non-English-speaking background. And the NDIS system itself is intensely bureaucratic, albeit that there may be translators provided and so forth. It's nevertheless, it's an enormous hill for people to have to climb, in many cases either on their own or just with the support of their immediate family. There are charitable organisations which help, but they are generally underfunded, and in many cases people may not know that they actually exist. The broader perspective from a socialist point of view is that funding on for things like disability support, indeed support for people in all kinds of areas, should not be capped, should not be restricted. It should be open and based on need. And Socialist Alliance also believes in moving away from what we call a medicalised model of NDIS, where you need to have, you know, a doctor or indeed a specialist saying, yes, you are disabled because of X, Y, Z, A, B, C, and rather basing it on a self-needs assessment. Now, some may say, oh, that means that people will simply claim things they don't need. Mm. Well, let me tell you, I rely very heavily on my carers, personal care, in order to get to, for instance, doctor's appointments or to exercise or indeed to make me lunch of an afternoon and so forth. Now, when I was able-bodied, the thought would never have crossed my mind to have some random person hang around my house and help me with things that I was more than able to do myself. So I think this argument that people will claim funds from the government purse that they don't need unless it's strictly rationed and restricted is simply a furphy and is in fact quite disingenuous and deeply offensive, I think, to those with disability.
And I guess I want to kind of take, because we've had a very good kind of discussion about the NDIS, and I guess I want to kind of take some of this into, I guess, a broader discussion beyond NDIS, and I guess I want to hear some of your kind of comments, I guess, on some of the contemporary issues that are affecting people with disabilities today, like, for example, you know, the impacts of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic that we're kind of all currently kind of living through, but of course everyone is experiencing it kind of differently. So yeah, I guess I want to kind of hear your kind of perspective on some of those issues.
Certainly. There is an argument which I support that disability is essentially a social construct. So it's not in that sense a medical issue. It's not an issue with one's physical problems or indeed one's social or cognitive problems. It's a social issue. It's attempting, it's people who need to struggle to be to find their place in society, not for any fault of their own, but through the barriers that society puts up. Now, if persons with disability live with that that difficulty throughout their lives, the COVID pandemic has certainly multiplied that many times. We talk about lockdown, and certainly there's been a lot of quite angry protests around issues surrounding lockdown, both in Melbourne but also in Sydney over the last year in particular, and we've seen it internationally. Excuse me, and people saying they just want to get government out of their lives and just be able to get on with their lives, et cetera, et cetera. Well, multiply that sense of concern and that sense of being sort of shut out for persons with disability, because it's in many cases people with disability also suffer from some form of immunosuppression. They're far more susceptible should they contract COVID-19 to getting an extremely bad case of it and suffering quite significantly, and even it causing death. And certainly in Europe and elsewhere, a disproportionate number of those who've died from COVID-19 have been people living with disability. So, but fundamentally, the impact on people with disability from COVID has been to shut us in even further. In many cases, we live our entire lives relatively shut in, confined to the house, or in some cases even just our room. And COVID-19 has made that even more difficult, I think, for many people living with disability. And I'd just like to offer my sincere and deepest solidarity to everybody who is living with disability on this International Day of People with Disability.
Thanks, Graham. Graham, and also listeners might remember the case of a six-year-old child who was born here in Australia who is ineligible to access funding under the National Disability Insurance Scheme. There was an article written about it in Green Left by Janet Parker titled "Disdain for Disability Added to the List of Crimes Against Refugees." And this little boy named Kayan has cerebral palsy, and the government is denying him and his parents permanent residency. They're trying to deport them because they think he's a burden on the community. And, you know, now his family have been forced to spend more than $40,000 on legal and immigration fees. And, you know, there are at least 15 families every year who face deportation because of a relative's disability, you know, because of our racist migration laws, which are exempt from the Disability Discrimination Act of 1992. I just wanted to, you know, bring that up. But Graham, as a Socialist Alliance spokesperson for disability rights, what's your perspective on how capitalism fails to support the needs of people with disabilities? I mean, how would a socialist society serve the interests as an alternative?
It's a very good question. Look, and I'm deeply concerned about the situation of Kayan. Of course, all people with disability, particularly those who are threatened with deportation. And it really it does show the extreme nastiness. There's no evidence that, for instance, the Labor Party would take any different attitude to a refugee with disability and would similarly try to hunt them out of the country on the basis of the burden that they placed on the Australian economy and just how absolutely outrageous that position is. As I said earlier, from a socialist point of view, the biggest issue with disability funding is the fact that it's rationed. And we understand, in Socialist Alliance, we understand that this is an exceedingly wealthy country. It's a wealthy country which has been made wealthy through exploitation, both of Indigenous and First Nations people within Australia, but more broadly by the exploitation of poorer countries, both in the region and internationally. It's a wealth that's been built on other people's labour, sweat, labour and disadvantage. And it's important that we actually give that back, not in the sense of stripping everything that is good about this society from the society, but certainly providing a generosity of spirit to provide for people in need. And certainly there is no evidence that this society will somehow tip over, will somehow collapse, if it starts to adequately fund issues like people suffering with disability, unemployment, you know, frail age, whatever the particular issue may be. So, as I said, from a socialist point of view, certainly in terms of NDIS, we believe that NDIS was a step forward. However, we would recast NDIS as being something which is controlled by people with disability. We would replace the current board with people elected by people with disability. We would change the basis of the funding to move away from this medicalised gatekeeper model to one which is self-assessed and make it very much rather than having to humiliate oneself and argue in front of a planner or indeed a local area coordinator every 12 months to 2 years about how, even though things are going okay, there's still all these things that one can't do. And moving away from that basis of continual humiliation to one where the support that people with disability and their families need to have a reasonable life is simply there for the asking. rather than having to be demanded and campaigned for, to be refused by NDIS bureaucrats and to have to go to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal to get justice, as a situation I'm in myself, we would nevertheless have NDIS or indeed funding for people with disability to support people with disability as a right, not a privilege.
All right. Well, we're getting probably to the end of our interview, I guess. And I guess, Graham, do you have, I guess, any kind of final comments you'd like to kind of end on for this?
I guess it's worthwhile noting the government attempted to bring in independent assessments. That was its key to, it argued, to cutting the out-of-control spending on NDIS. After a huge backlash from disability advocacy organisations and even from the state governments around the country, it backed away from that. Unfortunately, it becomes quite apparent, certainly from, as I mentioned earlier, being a participant in NDIS can be an extremely alienating and very isolating experience. But social media at least partly cuts through that. And certainly from social media, from a number of the amputee groups that I'm on, it appears apparent that NDIS is, in fact, as one might say, acting out. So the government has not actually changed the legislation. The government has not actually changed regulation applying to NDIS, and yet NDIS is seeking to smash and severely cut the funded support that people with NDIS, participants are receiving in the run-up to the federal election, in order to parade itself as a good economic manager. Now, it's important, I think, that both people with NDI, people with disability and their supporters, and their people who simply support a fair society in this country, be aware of this fact and demand from their local federal member that the government continue to pay reasonable supports to people with NDIS. I think it's important people are aware of this issue because this will be a big issue, certainly for those with disability, in the run-up to the federal election, and frankly, not let the bastards get away with it.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Graham. I think this was definitely a very informative interview, and I think, yeah, it was definitely a great kind of discussion to have for our special program on the for International Day of People with Disability. Thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you so much, Graham.
Oh, my pleasure, Chloe and Jacob. Thank you very much.